you could count on all the big stores like Blockbuster, Hollywood Video, stuff like that, to at least have one copy of it in stock. And when you had thousands...
Can you say that again? Because you just dropped something incredibly audibly.
I dropped a Lego. Okay, sorry. Okay, as we started last week, we're going to start cleaning out our cache of of leftover voicemails.
Yes, yes.
How do you leave a voicemail, Mr. Sean?
Oh yeah, you call us at our phone number, 608-492-1923. Super easy.
And you leave a voicemail.
Yeah, apparently the maximum is 3 minutes. So as Ugly Joe found out, got cut off.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can always call back in with more if you really want. Well, yeah. So we got another one here from Carl, who has been writing to us a lot lately on the on our show notes and everything. So take it away, Carl.
Hey, guys. It's Carl from Four Color Rebellion, yeah, a.k.a. the Earthbound Kid.
Oh, yes.
I thought your show on trying to put together an orange box was interesting, but you overlooked some past attempts to merge the PC and console video game businesses. So the two companies that are the biggest software companies in the world are Microsoft and Apple, and both of them have tried to do this in the past, and in fact, Microsoft has even tried twice. Originally, Microsoft of Japan tried to create the MSX, which you guys know was a big hit in Japan. The original Metal Gear was made not for the NES, but for the MSX.
Yep.
The disc system for it, yeah.
And then Microsoft tried again.
No card.
And they called it the Xbox, right? Don't you guys remember when the Xbox was first coming out? Everybody was talking about how this would be the bridge between console gaming and PC gaming.
I can see it as a bridge. Some of the software on the
Xbox would be using DirectX. So the same technology as was on the PC.
DirectX 9.
Apple tried with the Apple Bandai Pippin.
Didn't we mention the Pippin? I thought we mentioned that in that episode.
Apple theme name for their product. They should bring that back. It shouldn't be called the iPhone. It should be called like the Granny Smith or something. Anyway, but that was another failed attempt to bridge the PC and the console industry. So I would say the most successful time to put the PC and the console together was the Xbox, obviously. Even though they lost billions of dollars on it, it did eventually succeed
$4 billion
But what happened once they succeeded was it stopped being a PC and it became a console, so much so that you guys didn't even think about it when you were thinking about PC-console hybrids.
It's true.
All right. Well, so thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Bit of feedback there. Didn't we mention the Pippin though? I thought we mentioned it.
I don't know.
We've mentioned it a couple times in the other things, and that's despite the fact that it was a completely failed system. That's my holy grail that I'm trying to find. I'm trying to find myself a working with some games.
Nice.
I see him on eBay every now and then, but it's like $600 and
yeah.
That's too much for me to explore a system that's, you know, I probably wouldn't play for more curiosity. Right. I already got burnt. Like, I had to get myself a CDI in the Zelda just to see what it was all about.
Oh, yeah.
And I do. Yep. I've got it. Yep. I've got the CDI. I got the Zelda. And actually, the third Zelda game, not too bad. It was a top down.
I was going to say, at least stylistically, it was much like the other Zelda games. But I don't know if not too bad isn't accurate, because it still had the terrible animation, right?
The cutscenes?
Yeah.
Well, it's not less bad. I mean, like it was not, but like I'm just talking about as a game.
Sure.
Except the CDI, unless you bought the extended joystick, the one that they had that was included with the system, kind of a remote control type doohickey, was really hard to play anything on.
Okay.
Well, it worked well for games like, I don't know, like Laserdisc titles or something. But anyway,
Hotel Mario.
Okay, let's start with a couple things he brought up. Microsoft.
Sure.
The MSX, yes, MSX is a Microsoft system released a number of years ago, but I can't really call it a consoleized system because it was a computer. I mean, that's all it was. It was a computer. It wasn't a consoleized version of a computer, but like all computers at that time, Commodore 64, blah blah blah. You know, it came with joystick ports.
Right. Yeah. You know, the Apple II, being my first gaming machine, had joystick ports too, but I wouldn't call it a console. Like even though it had AV outputs and you could plug it into a TV if you really wanted to, it wouldn't. You know, that's a bit of a stretch, I think. Yeah.
I connected my Apple II to the family TV before we got our monitor, actually.
Right.
Because there was a little dongle you could attach to it that it would let it export to like RF. And that's what we did. Although the resolution was pretty bad, but
yeah,
well, like the monitor really kind of cleaned up the graphics a lot. But I mean, it was possible, and it was like the preferred way of using a Commodore 64, which had a lower resolution. MSX, Metal Gear did come out on that system first, but it really only came to the more advanced systems that had a disk drive. It was not released on cartridge for those systems.
Right, right.
It was a disc-based title. I can't really call it a consoleized system because it was just a computer. It was a type of computer.
And you know, Sega had like the SG-1000, SC-3000 around the same time. Yep. You know, the SC-3000 being the computer version of the same hardware.
Those are more like computerized consoles.
yeah, and it's like making you like wonder what the distinction between a console and a game system is. Like, you know, I would say a console is dedicated for gaming. Like, you know, the Apple II definitely not. It was a computer that played games. Even though you could set it up to use it as one, but you know, that wasn't its primary function. Like similarly with the SC-3000, you could just play your games on it, I guess, but it was meant to be a computer, you know. And even like the Famicom disk system, you know, was something computer like for a game console. You only played games on it, right? So
Sean, what does Famicom stand for?
Well, it says family computer, and it is a computer in the sense that like your calculator is a computer, I guess.
Well, but like they had a keyboard for it. You could program in BASIC for it.
But you had to put a cartridge in to do that. And, you know, anything cartridge based just screams of console. Come on. Really?
But that's, well, the Commodore 64 is cartridge based.
I guess. That's an exasperated sigh.
The MSX is cartridge based.
Oh, darn it. Well,
I mean, but both of them are more famous for their expansion. In Europe, most people played Commodore stuff on the cassette tapes,
sure,
which were really cheap and easy to buy, like anywhere. And in America, almost everybody bought a Commodore. Also, bought the Commodore 64 disk drive.
So, is it fair to call like the Xbox a consoleized PC then? Because it did have PC parts, but
it did. Like it had something of the 86, you know.
Right.
You know, they had an Intel, you know.
Intel graphics. Processor. Yeah, like a bunch of off-the-shelf hardware
it was
that
Intel
you could.
Intel graphics, though. I think it was NVIDIA? I don't know. There was a big dispute.
No.
That's why.
Sorry, Intel processor, NVIDIA graphics. Yeah, that makes sense.
Or was it ATI? I don't remember which
ATI did Nintendo, like the GameCube and the Wii. And
yes, they did. But I remember that when they switched from the Xbox to the Xbox 360, one of the reasons why not all games were compatible was because of incompatible graphics set.
Ah, so that's why they had to go back to the games and
licensing and stuff. Yeah, they had to tweak some stuff.
So is that why Conquer Live and Reloaded couldn't be played immediately on the 360?
It's possible. It's possible.
Oh, goodness.
But anyway, that's one of the reasons. But, I mean, if we're going to go there, I mean, can we really go there? Because, like, if we just go to the processors, like almost everything in the 80s used a Zilog Z80 processor.
Right.
And what used a Zilog? All kinds of stuff.
Well, so maybe you can define it as like purpose, intent, and price. Because an iPad, an iPhone, or an iPod Touch Those are all things that can play games, but that's not their primary function. Yeah. I wouldn't really call them gaming platforms because I don't know if anyone buys them just to play games, right?
Well, some people do. I think, you know, a lot of people on the gaming buy not the phone, but they'll buy like an iPod Touch primarily as a gaming device.
So that's a little different, but it is a pricier prospect. But like, no one buys an iPhone to play games because it's like a monthly fee. So if you don't use it as a phone or like some kind of, you know, internet data thing, then it's pointless and you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think anyway. But like, so like an Xbox, even though it was made of computer parts, was still meant to be a gaming machine and you could hack it to run Linux like a friend of mine did once or whatever. But that's true of any,
console. It wasn't that it was out of the box supported for it. Well, like PlayStation 3 was, but not anymore.
Not anymore, yeah.
Not anymore. They took it away. But like, for example, the PlayStation 2, to get around export taxes in Europe, Sony claimed that it was a computer.
Well, that's hilarious. Okay.
They claimed that it was a computer, and so they had to make this bit of software that allowed programming to hook up a keyboard to it and stuff like that. Almost no one bought this piece of software, but they had to have it exist because then they could claim that it was a computer and go under a more a nicer tax bracket.
Okay, yeah, all right.
This is a real thing. But Xbox, when it was released, never claimed itself a computer. Oh, go ahead.
Well, so maybe I had the final test here. Can you rent games for a computer? Or can you only rent games for consoles?
Ooh, as everybody knows, that's the defining thing.
Because like you can't even return. I guess disc based games now either, but you can't return software like on a floppy disk that you've opened before because it's like you probably just copied it, and then you give it back and you're like done. But you can't really. It wasn't as easy anyway with the consumer electronics available back in the 80s.
Copy local public library games. You could check out software.
Okay, like, yeah, mine too.
Disk-based software.
That's different. Which, but they weren't trying to make money at it, and they were probably a little naive about what was going on.
That's how I got the Carmen Sandiego series.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and then Number Munchers, great game.
Man,
but anyway, yeah. So yeah, that happened, but. I don't know. I think there were a couple local establishments. There was even one in Eau Claire that was at the what's the old dead mall? What was that?
Oh, London Square.
London Square. Yeah. Although I hear it's having a revival. Oh, sorry, we're talking about Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
It's been revived. I mean, it's what was the mall is now a parking lot, and what was the parking lot is now a whole bunch of strip malls. It's actually kind of nice now.
Oh, they tore it down?
Oh yeah, there's nothing left of it. Long since gone. Oh, you haven't been back to Eau Claire, really, since like the last 8 years.
I haven't really been back to America. But anyway.
It's true.
But when I was a college student, this mall I went to because they had one store. It only lasted for about a year. But it was a game. It was just a game store. It had a little arcade in there. And then they had PC games and console games. That's probably why it failed. It had like everything. But I remember I first bought Myth there. Myth, this is a strategy game made by Bungie.
Halo.
Back when they were a Mac developer. Wow. But that one was available for Mac and PC. But great game, actually. Wow. Really good kind of Warcrafty type game. But they had rental of PC games.
Whoops.
As an option. You could buy it or you could rent it. You rented it for like $5 for like a week or something. But like, I don't know. I wonder if they actually ran out of money or if someone closed them down because, you know, I'm sure copying happened, you know.
No, definitely.
Oh, there was a nice little store. I remember I went there and they were playing the game Magic Knight Ray Earth because this is the dying days of the Saturn.
All right.
And they were playing. Rare Earth is actually. So I guess Saturn was already dead by that time because that was the last game that came out on it. And I remember seeing that and I went, oh my gosh, that looks so fun. And I'm like, what system is that on? And they went, Sega Saturn. I'm like, Sega Saturn has games like this? And he's like, just one. In America. And I I was like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, how much is that game? And he's like, it's not for sale. This is mine.
Oh, wow.
It was that type of game store. It was like, I guess it would be like the comic book shop from The Simpsons, you know. It's like, this is Magic Knight Ray Earth, and it's not for sale. It's not meant for someone like you. Over there is Fighter's Megamix if you wish to have some kind of Sega Saturn title. You know, so. But I remember I went on eBay and I bought the game, and it was expensive. It was like $50.
Oh, wow.
I bought the game, and I didn't actually have a Sega Saturn, but I figured I'd get that later.
And how did that go?
Great, great decision. Wonderful decision. I think had I not gone there and seen Magic Knight Ray Earth, there would be no Famicom Dojo.
What?
Because it was buying the Sega Saturn and finding that all the games that came out in America pretty much sucked. Not all. Panzer Dragoon Saga, wonderful game. You know, there were some good games, but like there were so many really great games in Japan. I had my Sega Saturn, and I overheard a Japanese exchange student and his roommate talking in the cafeteria one day about Sega Saturn. And I'm like, I've got a Sega Saturn. So I sat down next to them, and he's like, I'm from Japan. I have all these import games. Would you like to see my import game collection? And I came over, and I came to his dorm room and saw his, it was an extensive collection. He maybe had 1,000 Sega Saturn Japanese game titles.
Mm.
And he's like, here's a converter. This is ST key. Put this in your thing. And would you like to borrow any of these games? And that's where it started. My obsession with collecting Japanese video games.
All right.
And that good to led, know. And that led to, you know, me getting into Famicom stuff too, which eventually led to Famicom Dojo.
There you go. And then that led to me when I visited you in 2006, and wanting to, you know, see a Famicom up close and personal, because I collected these capsule toys when I was there in 2003, so I had things like the keyboard and the disc system, and I didn't get the twin out of the set, but I got like everything but the twin, so I had like the AV Famicom too and everything, and I just found those again recently. That's pretty cool, but it's like I wanted to see a real one up close. I just always thought that, like, the form factor of the Famicom was so cool. And then you're oh, you want to get one? Let's just go get one. So we got like two of them because one of them didn't work well.
One of them at Wampaku, which was pretty much broken. And the nice working one that we got at Famicom Dojo,
which I also got my disc system at. And a whole bunch of games because Hero is so awesome. And it's like
are you interested in these? These have just been sitting here for years. Take Mini.
Yeah. Yeah, he gave me such a great deal. Oh, it was so great. So that's how my collection got started, was at Famicom Dojo. And then as we were trying to figure out how to videoize these, because I was working at, you know, Powit TV, and Phil Baum was doing his gaming archaeology series and stuff, we were trying to figure that out. And I ended up doing this silly little thing based on some footage that Vink and I took while I was in Japan. Like, you know, a year later, cut it into this ridiculous presentation I put together, and we have a show. Wow, that turned into the history of the show. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, one thing you brought up, though, about whether a system is a console or not, that means that there's no consoles in Japan.
Really?
Zero.
You can rent things in Japan. Like, you can rent CDs and stuff. I've seen those places. Like, I walked into one thinking, hey, I want to get this. And it's like, oh, do you have a membership? And I'm like, oh, no.
Yes. You can rent CDs from tons of places. You can rent DVDs. You can rent videos. You can rent comic books. Yes, you can rent comic books.
That's crazy.
But you can rent cars. But in Japan, there's one piece of media you cannot rent. Cannot rent video games.
Oh, video games, right.
Oh, you can rent porn. You can rent porn anywhere. But anyway. But no, you can't rent video games. Very powerful lobbies from... I mean, Japanese companies make a lot of money off video games, you know. Whereas a lot of the music is coming from outside companies and stuff like that. But, okay. Oh man, they're blatant about it too. The CD rental places, at the counter, they have stacks of CDRs you can buy and MP3 players. And I'm like, huh. That's convenient that they sell me the thing that will allow me to commit my copyright infringement.
Right.
More on that soon.
Uh-oh.
Not on my personal one, but copyright infringement in general.
Right, right. Okay, so you can't rent games in Japan. I mean, not anymore, right?
You never really could. In fact, for a long time, technically,
right?
Technically, used games were illegal as well.
Oh, interesting.
But like everybody ignored that. But like, go look on the back of an import Dreamcast game. Do you have one
handy? Not handy.
Just look on the back of your Samba 2000 version 2000.
Okay.
And it says right in the back, no. It says like no copy, no rent.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. It's, huh. So something like that. They were trying to stop that, but basically everyone went, no, we're still going to do this.
Yeah, because like my first time in Tokyo, went to Akihabara, or even just around Ikebukuro or wherever else I was, just walking into stores, and there were all kinds of used games there. Are you kidding me?
And about 7 years ago, something like that. I'm not sure exactly when it was. They passed a law in Japan that they were going to not sell old hardware as well.
Yeah, well, that obviously never took hold.
Well, it did actually. A lot of places that were not mom and pop stores or were not selling mainly retro, were selling like used games and new games. They just cleared out their old stock to avoid having to pay into that. Like the store that you bought your Famicom at, Wampaku.
Yeah.
They don't have anything older than PlayStation 2 now.
Wow.
But you know, they used to have all those rolls of Famicom games.
Oh yeah, they had like stacks and stacks of Famicoms. In fact, we went back, because we got like an ugly one that worked. Yep. And then we went back to get a nice pretty one. Didn't work, but we swapped out the internals. In fact, you'll see that ugly one make an appearance on the show again during the onslaught.
but just all that stuff. All of the stores basically got rid of their retro sections, except for stores like Famicom Dojo, which were retro game stores. So, like in my town right now, there used to be like 7 shops that sold like old retro games, and now it's down to 3.
So, how do the ones that still sell them get away with it?
They sell the power adapters separately.
Oh,
because what the problem was. The reason that the law went into effect, and this law was sponsored by video game companies, so like there's definitely some political stuff, because they don't want people playing used and old games.
Well, it was around the same time they had like these virtual consoles and stuff, right? So they were selling their old games
exactly.
on new platforms.
They want people to rebuy this stuff rather than be able to play their old stuff.
Because they get money, because they don't get money from the used market, right? So, yeah.
Got no money. So the companies were saying, but they claimed it was a safety thing. That some of these old power adapters, after a certain number of years, can overheat and possibly be a fire hazard.
Whatever.
So the way a lot of these companies got away from it, and some of them don't even care that much, because it seems like the rule was never really enforced. Companies like Super Potato just go, whatever.
Right.
I think you might be able to pay a fee to get around it, or I don't know.
Nice.
I don't know the details, because since didn't become such a big issue later on, you don't really hear much about it anymore. But it was a major topic, 7-8 years ago. But so a lot of the places, they sell the hardware separate from the adapter, and a lot of times the adapters are third party.
Oh, okay.
Which generate less heat and like have like fail safes or whatever, so that you can if it were to overcharge, it wouldn't cause your system to catch fire.
Okay, then.
But like, it's just a technicality, really. So that's why even at Famicom Dojo, you buy your Famicom and Super Famicom, then you got to buy an adapter for it. But here, lowered the price of the base hardware, so it comes out to the same. So it's,
well, there you go.
It's,
yeah,
it's someone wants to make one. It's a technicality, if anything.
No kidding.
But yeah, no game rentals here.
Okay.
Because of the same thing. The companies, and there's so much, a lot of Japan's economy comes from electronics and stuff. So, I mean, I'm guessing those are incredibly powerful lobbies.
Well, there's certainly not any game rentals in America anymore either. And that has less to do with lobbying than it just does of the nature of the ecosystem now, the market really. Because, I mean, if, let's flash back to the 80s, right? You know, we used to be able to rent... We used to be able to rent movies and games from, like, supermarkets. Like, you know, places like Blockbuster, I guess, existed, but weren't, like, really huge powerhouses yet. Because they had all this competition. I'm not sure when or why, precisely, grocery stores stopped carrying this stuff, but it seemed like it happened all of a sudden.
Well, I think what happened was, like, grocery stores... Oh, man. I still remember that one of the grocery stores had, I think it was like IGA or Red Owl or something. It had a copy of Tengen Tetris.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Tengen Tetris, which was like the incredibly expensive version of Tetris. And it said right on the game manual, if you don't return this game, the replacement fee is $200.
Oh, something, my God. You know. Okay.
It said it right on the game. And because of it, my parents wouldn't let us rent it.
Right, right.
Because they were like, no.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I looked at it and I'm like, why is this game so expensive? Of course, the history of because it was pulled from the market.
Yep. And it was hard to replace it, too. I was going to say, like, you know, maybe because there's rental fees, you know, different for buying like a DVD or something. You know, they charge higher amounts to license those out to people who rent them because they can, you know, make their money back. Right.
Yeah, so, but no.
Not the case here. Okay.
It was only it for a very short amount of time, and it is a superior Tetris game to the Nintendo Tetris in almost every way except the music.
Wow, that's fascinating.
It had the two-player multiplayer, like split-screen multiplayer.
Oh, already. Yeah.
The Nintendo one was single-player. Blah blah yeah. blah.
Tetris 2 did fix that, but
yeah, but that's
a whole other story. That's the story we're going to get to eventually, too. I think in video form.
Tetris could be an entire episode right there. How it
no
was like
kidding.
Out of old war country. I mean, you know, the USSR was still a thing when Tetris came over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's how did the? I mean, I know how because I researched it, but like,
yeah.
Okay, I won't get into that because it is a full episode right there. But yeah. it's spies and intrigue, and it's really an amazing story.
Patent infringement.
Yeah.
Patent totally. Fraud, really.
Oh yeah, so much stuff. Which led to the creator of Tetris not having received a single dollar for his work until, like, a few years ago.
Anyway. Flash forward to the 90s, right? You got, like, big powerhouses like Blockbuster and whatnot. I think the decline of rentals just sort of coincided with the decline of, you know, movie rental places. Because you don't really have game rental stores. You just have movie rentals that also happen to cater to games. And then people stopped getting their movies that way. And there was never really anything that replaced digital download content. They've tried. They've thought of things. Yeah. And they're still, you know, wanting to do, like, centralized service for streaming the actual pre-processed bits and stuff. But you can't really rent games. Oh, this is Gamefly, I guess. But does anyone use Gamefly? I don't use Gamefly.
Does Netflix have games? The disc-based service? I don't know. A lot of people did use Gamefly. People who are in regions where their internet connection is throttled or, you know, where they don't have broadband, there are lots of places still that are on, like, satellite internet or
right,
even dial.
Right.
So that's a viable option for those people, but...
We've talked before, like, about the DLC apocalypse being a problem and the whole going online thing because you can't rent things anymore. Like you buy or gift copies to people. There's some exceptions, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Is it Steam? Someone was telling me about, like, there's actually like a rental scheme on one of these digital services. I'm not sure how that works exactly, but I mean, that's, you know, being able to share something cheaply might encourage someone to buy it for themselves or. Whatever later on, if they can actually get their hands on it, and if you can't share things, then that just kills the market, I would think. So I guess I'm not terribly worried now because at least the used game places that I frequent sell them for so little as to be the same as a rental cost. You might as well just own it.
I suppose, and that might have hurt things too. So when did places around your town stop doing rental games? For me, it was the last one that my grocery store sold was N64. They never went to PlayStation. They never did the disc based ones.
Oh, okay.
Because I think maybe just the too much scratching of discs and things like that. Whereas
that
a
happens.
Cartridge was more steady. So they went and they stopped doing game rentals after N64. So
yeah.
Well, they stopped. all rentals. When it switched over to DVD, they just kind of went like, nope, we're done.
I rented games mostly when I was a kid because I didn't have enough money for that kind of thing myself. My parents would only buy things like on my birthday or Christmas. So, and that was during the cartridge-based era, largely. And then when I started owning my own consoles, from like the Super Nintendo onward, I'd still rent.
Yeah.
But like by the N64, like I actually bought the whole thing with my own money. And, well, half. I think my dad actually helped me with that one. But, you know, but by that point, I was almost an adult and I was making my own money and didn't have to worry about rental. I could just buy the things I wanted and didn't really need to rent things anymore, honestly. And I think as far as the movie front, I would go to Blockbuster from like 2005, 2006 pretty actively. But after that, just nothing. And the ones I used to frequent are gone now. Like every single Blockbuster I can think of is like literally like here and in Chicago, gone.
My town has, maybe on the east side we still have a Family Video. I don't know. But other
there's Family Videos around all over the place. Yeah.
All video stores are gone. But Family Video is like really crappy old stuff that is like two videos for 50 cents or something.
Yeah. There was a place like Video Congo or shoot Banana. I don't remember. There was this Bongo, Video Bongo, yeah, that was near where I live now. And it closed down recently after being in operation for like 30 years or something. Crazy.
It's kind of sad. I mean, first kind of like record stores kind of shut down, and then
yeah.
You know, and now where are all the snooty pretentious people work now?
Hot topic.
No, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, like they worked at bookstores, but bookstores kind of closed down, and then they worked.
Oh yeah, Borders closed en masse worldwide. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, all that's really left is Barnes & Noble, right? Yep. For a major chain. Walden Books is gone.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Wow.
You know, Borders is gone. For music, Tower Records is gone.
Yep.
Although it's still going in Japan, interestingly enough.
That is pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah. I went to a Tower Records a few days ago, actually. But, like, yeah, where do the pretentious people... coffee shops. They can still find work at coffee shops.
Yeah, people still love to drink coffee.
Yeah.
Why don't they rent video games out of coffee shops? I would do that.
Different demographics.
Maybe.
But what, like, kids of today, maybe they don't care, but like, I mean.
Yeah, if you just like borrow someone's iPhone or something? Like, what do you do to play games that you don't own?
If it hadn't been for those video game shops, I would have only played I think I owned maybe 12 games for my, you know, original 8-bit Nintendo. I think I owned 12 games. And everything else, all my experiences of the hundreds of games that I played was because every week my dad would take my brother and I down to the video store and we could rent one movie and one game.
Wow. I had a lot of friends who had games, so I'd like go over to their houses and play them. So like my parents wouldn't even buy the ones that my other friends had because it's like, well, you know, you can just do that. Why would I pay that for you? But then, you know, there'd be ones I didn't have and I can convince them, I guess.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't think about that before until just now, but it made nice economic sense. You can just go to your friend Chris's house and play Adventure Island. Why do you have to have your own copy?
Because it's Adventure Island, Mom.
That didn't work.
I need to buy it now because in 20 years, Hudson's going to be out of business.
Right. So that, I think it's one of the reasons I got... Oh. R.I.P. Hudson. Wow.
Yeah, sorry, Hudson.
Yeah, I think that's why I got Zelda 2 and not Zelda 1. Is because like I could go to someone's house and play Zelda 1.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, are you sure you want this one now? Because you like the first one a lot. And da, 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 da. It's like, I love it. And I did love it.
But yeah, what is game discovery now? I guess demos.
Yeah, there's free demos you can download.
Because, I mean, very rarely when you rented a game, you beat it. You know, you got about as far as you get in a demo. Well, I don't know.
Well,
when I was
depends.
A kid, we rented a game. That was what we did for the weekend.
The demos are designed so that you play them and finish it before you lose interest, though.
Yeah.
So.
Well, usually I was still having fun with the game by the end of the weekend or whatever, but pouring, delving hours into a game that wasn't particularly fun just because we made a bad choice.
Oh, yeah, that never happens anymore.
Home Alone the game.
Totally that rad.
That's
a terrible game that was.
Things like that. So you get a dud, and you'd be like, okay, this weekend we're going to play outside, you know? Like, if you got a really good game, you just play that sucker through, you know, the whole weekend. But if it was, like, a bad game, like, I remember Home Alone, after an hour, I was like, I'm going to go ride bikes.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we just got to have them call in and tell us what they think, because we can't guess anymore. I'm out of ideas, honestly.
Well, yeah, I'm not a kid, but, like, how do people discover new ones? I mean, because, like, all the paths of discovering new things that we had are gone now.
Oh, well, there's, you know, Penny Arcade, Kotaku.
Well, arcades Game Informer. Are gone.
Yeah, yeah, you know, the last one in Madison shut down not too long ago.
Really? Mm-hmm. A town the size of Madison has zero arcades?
Now, yeah.
That's tragic.
I mean, there's Frag and Dragon. They're not an arcade, but they might cater in a first-person shooter console experience. But they're like a pay-for-play kind of thing.
Oh, man, that's tragic. I mean...
Well, you know, there's like no-brand count. There's all these conventions that we, you know, worked at, helped found, and inspired other ones. And like, lots of people in the area that I know, like, still run the video game rooms at you know, the same guys. Like, the vast majority of those conventions just run the same stuff, and people can go there and play the stuff they're nostalgic for. And I don't know if they discover games there. Like, who goes to conventions to play games specifically?
I'm sure there's some people. Sean, that's it. We've got to start our own arcade.
Well, if you like losing money.
What do you mean? They do nothing but gain money. Every time you put a quarter in, that's a quarter for us. How could this model fail? If disco music continues at the same rate it does.
Who uses physical currency? Anyway, so yeah, if you want to let us know how you discover new games, why don't you call us, and we can play your wonderful voicemail on the air also at 608-492-1923. Of course, there's always our show notes at famicom.dojo/podcast. This is episode 53. If you want to leave one specifically for this episode, there's Famicom
Dojo. Isn't this 54?
Facebook and Twitter. Oh, 54. I am so sorry. All right, let me run that back. This is episode 54. If you want to leave a comment specifically for this episode, then there's Famicom Dojo on Twitter and Facebook. Our free iTunes storefront, Stitcher Radio. Where else are we? Oh, yeah, we're on WYOU now on a regular rotation. We should have a schedule up on the website by now, I would think.
I would think so. And yes. We're on the Zune Marketplace.
The Zune, you keep saying that, but I'm not sure that's true still.
We may or may not be on Zune Marketplace. Right. If you have a Zune, please write it.
That can't be that hard. They just want to feed, and we just sign up. No problem. So yeah, we're all over the interwebs and the terrestrial tubes.
I just figured it out. Waves. People might be discovering new games on the internet.
What?
Where do people discover games? They discover them on the internet, of course.
They read about them in interview sites, and then go buy them instead of renting them, I guess. A lot of people get mad when they can't resell a game. You can't rent them anymore, so it's like you got to recoup your costs somehow.
Yep.
That's okay. I only play games that I can borrow or buy, so...
I think that really... that you know, a lot of publishers have been going face up...
Belly up, recently. Face down in the
dirt.
That's it. Yeah.
Recently. And, I part of it, I mean, not enough that is super substantial, but, like, a small part of it might be because of the declining or the gone rental market. Because before, even if a game totally sucked, you know, even if it got bad reviews, but you could count on the big stores like Blockbuster or Hollywood Video to at least have, like, a copy of it because, you know, they had everything. So I'm not sure how much exactly this affected anything, but, you know, a lot of the companies are going face down, belly up, you know, recently. Yeah. They're dying. But before, a company, even releasing a pretty crappy game, could count on the fact that all these video rental stores needed to have all the new games in stock. So even if the game wasn't all that good, you could count on each video rental store to buy a few copies of it. Now, yeah. I mean, in the long run, maybe that hurt the game sales more, because if the game wasn't good, people would buy it and, you know, would rent it and not buy the full game. But those the first week, you know, or the pre-sales would be a lot stronger, because, you know, there were thousands of these video rental stores around. And if, you know, even if your game was pretty bad, you know, you could expect a bunch of copies that way.
I don't think that works, though, because I can't think of a single game that I bought that I, like, really regret buying. Okay, wait, maybe Fable 3. But that was just on the strength of, like, the previous installments. Like, I remember renting so many terrible, terrible games. But I typically don't make a habit of shelling out $50, $60+ for bad games.
I suppose. Enter the Matrix.
I'm so sorry.
I didn't buy the game. But, like, the only reason I rented it was because the Family Video had, like, a guaranteed to be in stock. No, not Family Video. Hollywood Video. It said guaranteed to be in stock. Ah. And it wasn't in stock. Because I was using a GameCube, and they only had two copies of the GameCube one. They had, like, right. 50 copies of PlayStation 2 and, like, 20 copies of Xbox, but only two of GameCube, and it wasn't there.
Did they try and make you take the PlayStation 2 one home? It's like, well, see, it's in stock here.
Nope. I went. Like, I had no interest in renting the game at all, but I saw it, and I'm like, hey. And so I went to the counter, and I'm like, do you have any copies of the GameCube Enter the Matrix in stock? And he's like, let me check.
Crap.
No, we don't. And I'm like, I was really hoping to rent that one.
Mm.
I see that you have a guarantee of some sort. They're like, err. And so, like, a week later, when they had it in stock again, they gave me a voucher to rent it. I think I played it for like 15 minutes, and I'm like, oh, this is terrible.
Then how was it out so long in the first place? Whatever. Mysteries that will never be solved.
I don't know. They only got, because they only had two copies of the GameCube one. But anyway, and I think that's about it for rentals. I miss it, but it's more of a nostalgia thing than a practicality thing.
Yeah,
but I just loved going. I loved going to the store and seeing the rows and rows of games, and going, what should I take home today?
Yeah.
And a lot of them are games that I'd read about in a magazine or something, but I'd never played. And I'm like, you know, and now I guess I could browse the App Store.
It's not the same.
For the cost of renting one of those games, I could own a game that is of the same quality.
Yeah, there is that.
You know, but at the same time, it just... I don't know. There was just something amazing about it. And occasionally you'd rent a gem, and you'd rent it a couple of times before you eventually just bought it.
Yeah.
And that was just a really cool experience of doing it. But it doesn't appeal to this generation, and I can totally see why it has gone away. But I miss it. I'm a nostalgic gamer as much as anything else. But tell me, I'm really interested to hear from our younger gamers who never grew up with it in the first place, you know, how they discover new games. And for the people who do remember it like me, do you remember it in such good light, or was it a scam from the beginning?
Ooh, good question.
And thanks very much to Carl for calling in. How many months ago? I don't know, but
that one was from March, so we didn't get to that one because that was when we went on our unexpected hiatus for the podcast. But we're back weekly now. We're getting all caught up on these voicemails. So
I don't know what's going to happen, but like in September, my family's planning to have an unsuspected hiatus.
What?
Remember the last unexpected hiatus was when you became a dad.
Uh-huh. So you're announcing this officially.
Yes, I've got an unexpected hiatus in the oven.
I hope it comes out delicious.
You know what? I've been trying to think of names, and maybe that's what'll stick.
Unexpected hiatus. What are the kanji for that? Maybe it'll come out as something lovely.
Probably not. We'll call her Haya-chan for short.
Haya. Nice. Haya.
I think my wife, if she's listening to this, is wincing in pain right now. But anyway, but yeah, thanks very much, Carl, for sending that in. Sorry that we didn't. I hope we weren't rude about it. But you made a lot of valid points. Sometimes we probably should have gone over that in the podcast itself, why we didn't mention things like the MSX. But like, I guess because we're total nerds, like in our minds we'd already kind of dismissed them. Sorry.
Right.
But I mean, at the same time, it does raise an interesting question of what is a console and what is a computer system in the first place. Like the Atari 2600, the Apple II used the same processor. Of course, different utilizations, different memory stuff. And it's the same with the Commodore 64. Like the guts of like almost every 8-bit computer were either the 6502 Motorola processor or the Zilog Z80, which even went as far as to the Neo Geo. Oh, I think I'm giving away something.
Oh no. Oh. Well, we can't have that.
Never mind. All right. Never mind.
Backpedal.
Huh. We're not doing a video about Neo Geo.
What are you doing?
So anyway, stay tuned with Famicom Dojo. More great stuff coming up. And keep those emails and voicemails coming in, and we'll use them in a more timely fashion.
Yes. Promise. Oh, crap. Well, yay! Whoa!
Famicom Dojo. So when you have thousands of chains and things like that, and the bigger titles, even the bad ones had.
Sorry, that was me that time. I don't know what the hell happened.
Where should I start?
I don't know.